When I was in Hong Kong, I went back there. The last time I was there was 2018, and I bought a, you know, when you buy things for the dead to burn.
Yes.
So
yes,
I bought an iPhone, and I drew Grindr on it, and I burned it for Leslie Cheung. Because I thought, he doesn't have Grindr on his phone. So I got him a new cardboard iPhone, and I drew Grindr, and I'm like, you can use this.
That is in heaven. So cute.
It was really cute.
I think he's using it. He's getting dicks.
A lot of dick.
Hi guys, I'm Jiaoying Summers. Welcome back to Tiger MILF Podcast. Today is the reason why I started this podcast, and today is the best day of my life. I'm sitting at her house, and you know who she is. And she is a pride and joy of all of us girls, us Asian people. And her name is not about the skin color. Her name is the name. It's not about her gender. Her name is a name that she represents bravery, brilliance. Today we have the great Margaret Cho.
That's so wonderful. I love you.
I love you.
Thank you. It's such an honor.
It's such an honor for me to be at your beautiful home. And Lucia is my friend now.
She loves you.
She really does. Yes, Lucia.
She's a big fan. She's really a big fan.
So adorable.
She's like not, she hasn't stopped. Like ever since you walked in, she's just like all on you.
She likes me.
She loves you.
Your new friend.
She's so into you.
She has a little hand like a little baby. She's
just like trying to hold. Like this is okay. All right, that's enough. Let her talk. She's so funny. She's so into you.
So beautiful.
Oh, I'm glad you're here.
I'm so happy to be here. Love your beautiful home.
Thank you.
We have a lot of beautiful art.
Yeah.
So you love to collect arts.
I collect art, and then I also make a mess. So it's also like all of my art things, like collect art, and then I make art, and then all my dumb stuff is all over the place. And my cat furniture is everywhere. And usually nobody comes here. So this is very special. I'm really glad you're here.
I'm very special. I feel so special.
Yeah, you are.
My life will never be the same.
It's great.
I just want to thank you for being so generous with your time.
Of course. Thank you.
And thank you for being Margaret Cho.
Thank you.
Your name is a motivational speech, I feel like. Not just for girls, not just for Asian people, I think. It's just so wonderful. You and Bruce Lee.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah, you and Bruce Lee. And when I think about you, I don't think of Asian female comic. Mm. And nobody think of that. You're just the great comedian.
Oh, thank you.
And happen to be an Asian woman. That's really it is.
That's wonderful.
And, thank you for everything you do. And thank you for so generous with your time. It's a lot of up and coming comedy comedian stars like Atsuko. And she was on my podcast.
Yeah,
and
she's great.
She talked about how much she loves you and how you empower her so much.
Yeah.
Because it's such a tough business.
It's
tougher for you than for all of us now, because you've opened the door for us, and you continue to keep the door open for us.
Thank you. Well, it's important because you have to carry on the legacy. Like, you have to continue to go out there and work and create these places so that the next generation can go. You know, we have so much to do because we're really generating the entire landscape of Asian American comedy. So it's really important.
Yes. And I know we know how hard comedy is for, you know, for people to have it as a career. Would you, if you have a young Asian comic come to you, ask advice, and the parents ask you, would you encourage them to chase, or be like, be a doctor? Just don't have your heart broken. Or you're like, you know,
it's
what?
Harder to be a doctor, I think. I would say it is way harder because, well, comedian, you don't necessarily have to go to school. You just have to go and do sets, which is a little different. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think also you just have to want to do it as well. I mean, if somebody wants to do it, if like there's like a young Asian comedian and they want to do it, that's like mostly half of like the battle is the desire to do it. Because most people are very scared to do comedy.
Yes, it's very, very scary.
Didn't you always want to do it? Did you sort of think, oh, this is what I want to be?
I think when I love to be a performer, I knew that deep in my heart. And it was very difficult in China because we have a different beauty standard in East Asia. Me having dark skin and big jaw and big cheeks, and I was never picked for school play. Mm-hmm. I wasn't encouraged to be a performer because I wasn't beautiful in the traditional sense. They wanted girls with pale skin. They wanted skinny, skinny girls. And I wasn't looking like that, but I just refused to believe that I cannot do it. I want to feel like maybe there's something wrong. It's temporary that I'm not good looking enough.
That's so crazy because you're such a beautiful girl. Like, thank that's you. So weird to me.
It is so weird.
It's
and
so
the
weird
thing
because
stopping me is me being not attractive because people, my nickname was Cage Fighter. They call me a Cage Fighter because I was so dark. I love the sun. I don't care. But, you know, they don't want little girls to get tanned in Asia.
But I don't even perceive you as dark. I don't even know what that means. Like, what is. Like,
I think if you look like you are not a zombie, you are too dark in East Asia.
Yeah.
Because I look like people think I'm Filipina or like from Thailand because they got the sun.
Oh, yeah.
Like
I don't
for
know.
For us, like Koreans and Japanese and Chinese, like they mm-hmm. just, they want you to be like a pale white, like traditional vice. They want that, but it's getting so much better now.
Mm-hmm.
You can see like K-pop, we have the K-pop stars like tanned. And in Japan, there's people are getting tanned. It just need to happen because...
Yeah.
Same as in America, people get sick from being tanned. They get cancer.
Yeah.
But in China, the skin bleaching agents, like it's in everywhere, it's in lotion, it's in foundation.
Yeah.
And people want to buy the product. If they keep wearing it, they look lighter. Like, oh, that's good for me. I'm getting lighter. But they are bleaching their skin.
Yeah, that's so weird.
Yeah, it's just it's so different. We are destroying ourselves for different standards.
Right.
And whatever people doing in America is what people don't do in China. I just really started watching Hollywood movies. But the sad thing is that the stand-up comedy does not exist in Asia. When I was growing up,
mm-hmm.
we didn't know there's a thing called a stand-up comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And you are the woman, I think after you became Margaret Cho, stand-up comedy started to get more popular, I think, in Korea, because you are Korean-American.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in China, it's not until recent,
right.
like 5-6 years ago, when Joe Wang did this White House correspondent dinner, he went back to China.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start to be like, wow, we have great Asian comedians in America, Margaret Cho, and before, after you, Joe Wang, and then stand-up comedy started popular. So I didn't know I can do comedy. And I because I always was funny, because I wasn't the pretty girl. I still want attention. I want people to like me.
Mm-hmm.
I try to tell jokes. I try to be funny. And I think I watch Hollywood movies. I see beautiful, like, Latino girls and black girls, they have dark skin. They obviously are very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's something wrong with the beauty standard. I just kept this dream in my heart. I want to go to America to become a performer. So I came here when I was 18 for college.
Mm-hmm.
I knew I want to go to college and then I want to come to Hollywood and start to become an actor.
Yeah. That's good. That's good. And then when did you start doing comedy here?
I think I have this problem with auditioning is that my accent is not good. I have an accent and I don't have a musical ear. So I was trying to lose my accent, but I started learning English when I was 18 years old. It was a little late for me to not have an accent. And that became the problem. The acting, I got a call back and then eventually they evaluated. They just really prefer to have a girl with no accent. Also, if the character has an accent, they want this girl have an American accent and put on a fake Asian accent.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want a real Asian accent.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of rejection. And this one day, I auditioned for this TV show called Rebel, John Singleton's TV show, Rebel.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a black girl. She's a cop. She has Asian sidekick. Her right hand is an Asian girl from Oakland that I auditioned for. And I remember John Singleton asked me to do some improv and mm-hmm. I started improvising and mm-hmm. he started laughing so hard.
Oh, good.
Laughing. And then he walked to me and he put out his phone and he's like, do you know what is stand-up comedy? I said, no. He said, this is Ali Wong's Baby Cobra. Do you know who's Margaret Cho? I said, yeah. He's like, you should try stand-up comedy.
Oh, that's great.
I know who you are. I watched you on TV shows and I know you are a stand-up comedian. I didn't know I can do what you do, because if I cannot even audition with things written for me to memorize, how mm-hmm. can I do what yeah. you do? Because yeah. you write everything. Mm-hmm. You are your own director, writer.
Right.
And that's just something with all the rejection in auditioning. I knew there's no way in hell I could even consider to do stand up. He told me, if you do stand up, you can, you work very hard, you find your voice, mm. you can do acting.
Yeah, totally.
Because you
yeah.
claim that you have an accent and that's who you are.
Yeah.
He followed up and we became friends. And eventually I went back to China. I host a Shanghai Film Festival. I got married to a Shanghainese man. Because I just still didn't think I can do it. When I had my first baby, I really realized that I have to be on stage. Mm. If I can't be an actress, I need to do my first open mic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
2019,
great.
That's when I did my first open mic.
Wow.
And in 1 month, I bought a comedy club for myself. On Melrose.
Wow.
It's still going strong. It's pretty good. It's doing well.
Mm-hmm.
It's not big, 40 seats.
Uh-huh.
I just know I was so bad and I loved it so much. Yeah. It's like you're trying to please your parents, you know, you want them to be happy and you are not good at math. You're like, I'm going to study all night, every day until I'm good so they don't hit me. So I love comedy so much. I knew I love it. It made yeah. me feel so good, but I wasn't good. It's so hard. It's such a hard craft.
It is a hard craft. It's also like you have to keep working at it. And there's no way that you're ever really there. Like, because you always have to keep trying. You always have to keep writing. You always have to have new jokes. You always have to continue to work. It's not like a singer, because we don't have like hits. People don't want to hear the same jokes over and over. So you have to do new ones. But they also have to fit in the framework of who they believe you to be and who you believe you to be. So it's a real challenge to continue to figure out, how do I do this in a way that's different but also the same?
Yeah.
So it's interesting. It's something that it's taken a lifetime for me to still figure out. You know, I try to do different things and I try to, you know, work around things. And I'm always amazed at, like, I don't even know how this works, but it works. It's good.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I realized I need a stage time and the open micing is not enough. So I bought this club and I started to host open mic 10 hours a day.
Oh, wow.
Every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that really helped me to find my voice and even learn how to hold a microphone, how to be not nervous on stage.
Yeah.
And that was just like so important. I was so lucky. I got to have that club. And then after I started to do better. We just produce a lot of shows on the weekends. We have Asian male lead, Asian female lead, all these mm-hmm. Asian people. We have a lot of Asian shows with all Asian lineup.
Wow.
Which we just, everybody's Asian, people are like, it's not going to sell. And they always sell out because it will sell. People
yeah.
say it won't sell because they don't want to see that much Asian on a lineup, but it will sell out.
Yeah.
And I feel so lucky I'm able to provide this stage for people like me who don't get booked often because when you start, nobody wants to book you. But
well, it's hard to get like passed at these clubs, you know, like it's hard to get your foot in the door. Also, especially like in LA or like New York, there's not a lot of places because a lot of places are like waiting for people who are already famous
yeah.
who want to come in mm-hmm. and work on their act, because we all have to keep working on it.
Yes. Yes.
So stage time is limited and it's hard to sort of break in mm-hmm. when you're new. But then if you own a club,
yeah.
then you can just run it yourself.
Yes.
That's great.
Yeah, I got lucky. I have it. The more I learn, the more I know how hard it is. And
mm-hmm.
then it amuses me sometimes when something works out. It's so addictive.
Yeah.
It make you, one joke works out, I'll be happy for 2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I always have to like, whenever, like, that's the best feeling. Like, go back and go, oh, this works. And I'm like, oh, well, then maybe something else can work. It gives me confidence to do something else.
Yeah.
It's really great.
Yeah.
It's great. My favorite.
I think I was planning on leaving my husband because he's like very mentally abusive.
Mm.
I didn't know he was mentally abusive because my mom was very verbally abusive. She's just being a really regular traditional Chinese mom.
Mm-hmm.
We are very close now.
Mm-hmm.
But she's just verbally abusive, very. Mm-hmm. And I think at the beginning, my husband was so charming and nice. Then he's a Chinese man, became very verbally abusive, calling me fat, calling me unattractive, I don't have makeup on. I was like, huh. I didn't have boundaries because I feel like the way like a traditional Asian girl growing up is that we get punished when we have boundaries. Like when you don't listen.
Yeah.
You know that's wrong. Mm-hmm. So I was trained to not have boundaries. Mm. So I just assumed that he loves me, he cares about me, he wants me to wash myself. But eventually it got really bad. It got really bad to a point that it got physical. So I want to leave him.
Yeah.
I didn't know how, but I realized that I have to make comedy work.
Yeah.
I need to make it happen, and it's not going to happen because it's just going to take you at least 10 years because this is so hard. Mm-hmm. So I decided to just work nonstop, go to club 10 hours a day, just do it, then start posting my jokes on social media, see which one on TikTok, see which joke works. It helps me find my voice faster because the algorithm, if something goes viral, you know that's the topic people like to hear. Mm-hmm. So I work right more on that. And so with social media and working so much, I start to make some money. And I thought, oh my God, I need to work harder so I can take the kids with me.
Yeah.
Because you don't have money, I can't take the children. And I don't think I'll leave him if I cannot be with the children.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to be with them.
Of course.
So I was able to take the kids. And I didn't take any money from him. I just, my offer was, you take all the money, I take the two children. And that's what I want. And he agreed to it.
That's good.
So I start over from be on my own, and it was so empowering.
That's wonderful.
Helped me with my boundaries so much. When some men I am dating is being abusive, and where am I going to bye?
Yeah.
Because I'm here to set an example for my daughter. I want her to know that something is off limits and we don't have to put up for anything.
So important. It's so hard because it's like, yeah, I've been in so many abusive relationships because I just didn't know I could set those boundaries, or that I, you know, we're not raised. Like Asian women, even if we're like, you know, in different generations, we're from different generations. So, but still, like the mentality that they put you, like you're supposed to just do what these men say, and you just, you know, like you're supposed to accept it. Mm-hmm. And it was really hard for me to understand or trust my own internal voice saying this is wrong, this is bad. And yeah, it's also made like a really... I kind of find it very hard to date anyway. Like I kind of am not, I'm sort of on a dating, like I'm not interested. I don't know. I'm also 55. So that sort of, I think that all of that is very, I might not want to do it anymore.
Yeah. It's too complicated. Like I, after my separation with my husband, I was not seeing anybody. I was celibate for 10 months. Mm-hmm. I just don't even want to have sex with any human. It's hard to date, not just in LA. I mean, as a female comedian, it's very hard to date, I feel like. I was talking to Adam Carolla, and he said, well, they still try to date, you know, but it is hard for us to date. Male comedians easier to date.
Yeah, I think so. But then male comedians are so ugly.
Yeah. But girls, we make them cute when they are funny.
Yeah,
every time they're funny, they're cuter here.
But we're not impressed by funny guys.
We're not.
We're just not impressed by funny guys because we just know so many funny guys. So we're just like, oh well, you know.
Do you have like the guy want to date you and they try to tell you jokes because try to impress you and you're just like,
yeah. It's like don't do it, don't do it. I mean, but it's just but yeah, there's like I don't know. I think a lot of women, they're like attracted to comics. I'm just like, ugh. Or when you see like comedy groupies that are like these girls who love male comics, I'm just like,
oh,
so
God.
Horrified.
Oh my God.
It's so sad. Yeah. I'm sad. Oh God.
Yeah.
So
be
sad.
Groupie for somebody, like for somebody, a hot musician, you know?
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
That would be
like,
sexy.
It would be sexy, but it's just it's a really funny thing.
Yeah. But I think male comedians is easier for someone to find a girlfriend. It's harder for us to find a boyfriend.
Yeah, it's harder because there's just something very intimidating about women in power. I don't know, but I date women too. That's easier. I think it's a little bit easier, but it's a very it is weird. Like if I'm dating a guy, like I don't like necessarily want to invite him to my shows or anything. It always feel like it's weird. I don't know.
I remember I was on this dating app for like a little bit while. It's the first time I got on this app. It's called The League. It's so stupid. And whenever there's a guy I think is cute enough to match with me, I'll just like, hey, I want you to come to my show so you see the level of craziness you can handle to see me like the next day for coffee. So yeah. They'll come to the show. And then they're just like, the first time they see you crazy, they're like fascinated. Then they go to have coffee with you. Then gradually they get to know me. They don't talk to me anymore because I'm just this such an alpha female.
Yeah.
You are so alpha because as you command the world, you are Margaret. Like you, that's who you are. Your energy commands the stage. I feel like when you go to a room and visit his friends and the people start talking, you just start cracking jokes without you knowing it because the cracking jokes, making everybody laugh is such an alpha move.
Yeah.
It's in control.
Yeah.
Make the man feel like insecure, I think.
Yeah. It's just like how I think I would always operate, but also feeling like alpha, feeling in control is just, it's also kind of a trauma response.
It is a trauma. Oh my God, that's my trauma response.
Yeah.
Of my life.
Yeah.
It's like, if I have power, they can't abandon me.
Right. Because we're so used to being abandoned that we have to have control. For me, it's like, I'm so used to being controlled, I have to overcompensate.
Yeah.
By being ultra in control. Like, yes. Not alpha, like Sigma. Mm-hmm. Female, you know,
Sigma. That's my new nickname, Sigma.
It's so Sigma, but it's really, it's confusing. Like, how do I even navigate? So now my response, really, my trauma response, or I don't know what it is, but it's like to retreat. Like, I don't know. Like, I think, maybe I'll date again. I don't know. Maybe I'll entertain that idea again, but I'm sort of not sure.
It's very difficult. So when you grew up in San Francisco.
Yeah.
The greatest comedian either grew up there or found their voice there.
Yeah.
Margaret Cho, Lenny Bruce went there, mm-hmm. George Carlin went there, mm-hmm. and also Lenny Bruce, I already said him, and Richard Pryor, when he had this like a bottom, he drove to Berkeley. Mm-hmm. I mean, more, you know,
there's
more.
The person that I really loved was Paula Poundstone. She was really something. Like, I would just follow her. I would go see her shows all the time. And she impressed me so much because she was so improvisational and just so, you do a lot of that. Yeah. Like a lot of crowd work. That's mm-hmm. really great. Like, I don't really do that. You're so good at it.
Oh, thank you.
You're really, really good at it. Thank you. Like, it's really magic, you know, when you can make something out of what's happening there. And that's what Paula would do. So you would like Paula Poundstone.
Amazing.
But it's like a very, she, I just worshiped her. And there was so many different people. But yeah, comedy in San Francisco was great because there were so many clubs and everybody was going out to see it. And there was a lot of radio shows that would feature comedians.
I see.
So I had comedy in my ear all day. And then I would go out and see shows like, and I was like really just a young person. Like mm-hmm. I shouldn't have even been in these clubs. So I was way too young to be there, but I loved it.
There's the Hungry Eye. Was it
no,
in San Francisco?
This was after the Hungry Eye, but there was a place called The Other Cafe, mm-hmm. which was really amazing. And that was a big place in the 1980s. Mm-hmm. So that's nice. One of the places I started at.
Wow. So Phyllis Diller also started there.
Phyllis Diller, yeah. She was around there.
It's everybody. It's magical about San Francisco. I mean, Artie Wong after.
Yeah.
She's also from San Francisco.
She's from San Francisco.
All the greatest.
All of the greatest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. There's something about San Francisco.
Yeah.
That it's a lot like you. You are ahead of your time.
Yes. It's also a rebellious place, you know? Yeah. So I think anybody who's sort of a little bit ahead of that, mm-hmm. ahead of the curve of ahead of, you know, free thinker, whatever.
Intelligence.
Yeah. Too.
San Francisco is smart.
It's for people who are rebellious and smart and artistic.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So when you were growing up, was your parents, they are like the first generation immigrants?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you were second generation?
So what is first is a coming here and then second is born here. So
yeah,
I guess I'm second. Second. Yeah, yes. You're right. Yes. I'm second.
So they must be like tiger moms, your mom?
Not really. Mm-hmm. They were... they're kind of passive. I mean, in a way, because I was so Americanized and mm-hmm. so rebellious. Like I was just like punk and queer and they didn't know what to do. They were just very confused.
Were they like a super fancy people who came for like a PhD, or they came just to see? That's the difference, because they are so educated.
Yeah. So they came. My mother had emigrated from Korea to France, and then from France to America. So she was a French teacher and like was speaking French, and like, you know, she was like, oh, I'm going to live in Paris and be there. But then they ended up moving here to San Francisco in 1964. So they, you know, we're here like kind of like for class. I mean, we didn't have that much money, but we did have sort of like, I guess, an educational advantage. Wow. Cause they were both
super intelligent,
really smart, but also pretty, pretty independent thinkers. Wow. So, you know, not necessarily the same as a lot of people that came.
Wow. I'm fresh off the boat. I came here by myself to go to college in Kentucky.
Wow. Where did you go to school in Kentucky?
UK, University of Kentucky. I really want to come to America. I feel like I can just be me. I don't have to worry about being lighter and lose weight.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm not skinny. I have big bone. I have thick bone. I'm not like skinny. Now I'm older, busy like running around nonstop, working nonstop. I naturally lose my weight, but like I was never skinny and pale skin. And I just don't want to make an effort. Mm-hmm. I felt there's something wrong about the beauty standard. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if I go to America, it's more diverse, because I see people, curvy, dark, beautiful woman. Mm-hmm. And I just really think this is not an end. I don't have to admit, okay, I'm unattractive, or like let me starve myself and bleach my skin so I can be attractive. Mm-hmm. I think there's another way. And I wanted to go to America, and my first offer from college was from University of Kentucky. Mm-hmm. I just want to get a visa before my mom changed her mind. I know I can always go from Kentucky to New York.
Yeah.
I just need to leave.
Yeah.
Leave and leave. And then I went to Kentucky.
Yeah. What did you like live in? What was in Lexington?
Lexington.
Yeah.
It's a little blue spot.
It's a little kind of liberal city.
Yeah. It was very sweet.
Yeah. That's cool.
People were pretty nice to me.
Yeah.
Actually. Mm-hmm. The meanest person was when I was working as a waiter in a Japanese restaurant. A Chinese guy owns it. He was very mean to me.
No.
Because I didn't have a green card. So he made me to do all the disgusting jobs, like clean the bathroom. Whenever there's like somebody vomited, he wanted me to go clean it up.
Oh, horrible.
Yeah, because I don't have a choice. I got paid cash and I can't legally work. I'll do whatever to do it. But that was, it's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to do it anymore.
Thank God. Thank
God. Which is good.
It's good.
The best.
Yes. I want to talk about how much you empowered the AAPI queer community.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I had a lot of friends in America, also in China, who is in the community. My friend like Guy Tang, he talked about you. Mm-hmm. He's a hairdresser. He's a gay Asian boy.
Yes.
And he talked about how much you empowered him to be like, I'm great. I'm cool. Mm-hmm. It must be like I think you are the leading figure in the community.
That's
who's
nice.
A huge celebrity. Who's like, because in our community, we just try not to make our parents angry. And
right.
We hide and our, we make us, we make ourselves unhappy too.
Yeah. It's
just
so sad.
Please them.
Because it's like, why are we doing that? Like, why are we holding our own happiness hostage? I mean, they're holding our happiness hostage. Like, they're not allowing us to just like celebrate our lives because of some idea of who we should be. It's really insane.
Yeah.
The older generations, like the hold on, I think, Asian Americans, it's really like, you know, the reason why there's not as many of us in the arts, that's why there's not as many of us out there, you know, doing different stuff. So it's really frustrating. It's I have a lot of friends in Korea who are in the closet, which is really sad.
They also get married.
They make deals with other people.
Yeah.
And they get married. And
they also have boyfriends.
It's super unhappy. Yeah.
Very unhappy.
It's really awful. And I feel so bad, you know, because... like, why can't you just be free? It's your life.
Yeah.
Like, and also, why are you seeking the approval of people that would not approve of something like, you know, it's just all it is like somebody you want to love, which I think is really, that's not none of their business.
It's not their business. And the point about Asian parents, they will never be happy about you anyways.
I know. They're not going to be happy because they're not happy.
Yeah, they won't be happy about you anyways.
Well, they made so many compromises in their lives to please the older generation. For them, they're like, well, you have to do that for us. But it doesn't have to work that way.
Yeah, and the funny thing about being in China is most people are in the closet. And when some woman is so furious, like Jing Xing, she is a transgender woman. She was a man. She's a dancer. Then she transitioned into a woman. She's so sure of herself and she became a woman. She's a gorgeous woman. And she became one of the most successful TV show, late night show host. That she basically, she just said, I am a trans woman and I'm better than all of the other women. I'm getting the job. And that was kind of mind blowing. When on one side, we majority of people are in the closet. One side is just like this trans woman who even the trans right in America is so behind. People are debating, they can't use this bathroom, they can't do this. This woman just making all the money, being famous. People are quoting her, like the gay kids worship her. It's just really crazy. I think it's such a savage thing because she didn't care. She was like, I don't care what your rules or regulations. I'm just a better host than everybody.
That's good.
And that's just she's a lot like I think of you is that you, I think your fans love you so much is because you are so true to yourself, and you took all the bullets for everybody and you just stand in the front and you are true to yourself and you made it okay for us to be okay with ourselves, the way we look. We look Asian, and that's what we're gonna look, and we're always gonna look like this. We either hide or just going to blow up that face, be like, that's what we look like.
Yeah,
and that's great.
Yeah,
and it's just so empowering.
Thank you.
You are so brave.
Well, I think it's like just not having a choice because I just wanted to do it, you know, and I sort of didn't care.
It must be so hard for you. I know you spend a lot of time in the club since you were very young, and so you are very good at what you do. But when you were starting out, it's not just hard for an Asian female. It's hard for female.
For females. And for also, females. Like, there was no Asian people. And there was very few women. Like, it was just really weird.
Yeah.
But I remember one of my first gigs, they used I didn't have a headshot. So they used a photo. Like, it was a caricature of Chinese railroad worker from the 1800s eating a bowl of rice with chopsticks with the buck teeth and the queue, like the braid. And to represent me as one of the comics, they put a caricature, a racist caricature like that in the window. And I was like, they took it down, but I was like, they were actually trying to help. They thought that I would like it. They thought that I would like it.
Oh, wow.
So that's how backwards things were.
Wow.
But you just kind of go, okay. And I just was able to continue to just do shows. I just kept doing them. I don't know. Like, it just made it so, was weird to come up against that. And like in the 80s, every comic had like an Asian driver joke. Mm-hmm. It was all this like Asian driver comedy. Mm-hmm. And then I would have to go on and sort of deflect that.
Mm-hmm.
And, audiences would feel like I was going to guilt them out. Like, I'm like, how could you do that? How could you laugh at that? That's fucking racist. And so, you know, I was almost like a cultural police in a way. And I didn't even know like what that meant. And it was hard to figure out like, what was the balance of like, do you do material about being Asian or do you not do any material about it? Like, don't even mention it. You know, that was sort of a thing of like, that's a possibility too. Like, maybe I can kind of skate by, like, they're not going to know it. They might think I'm white if I don't even talk about it. You know, like, it's a weird thing. So identity was always part of it. So I always had to sort of lean into it, especially then because there was just nobody out there like me.
Mm-hmm.
And only recently have I seen, and it took like 20 plus years to see another Asian woman do a comedy special, and that was Ali Wong.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You know, when I saw her, I was like, this is like finally the first time that I can actually sit down and enjoy somebody else doing this.
Yeah.
Because nobody had done that. So it was really important.
Yes. thank you for all the things you've done.
Thank you.
I can't even imagine how difficult it is. You are by yourself. Yeah. You are a warrior. You are your own army for us.
Yes.
And that's why, like, your gender, you happen to be a woman. You are the Asian god and goddess by yourself, fighting along. And you know that you are going to lose so much fans if you identify as a queer, as an Asian huge figure. And you're like, that's who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually one of your identities, is your bravery.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just so impressive, because a lot of huge celebrities, you know, they are gay, but they won't tell you. Even in the 80s, oh my God.
Yeah,
like,
nobody
in Hong Kong
was
like, nobody's gay.
Nobody
you
was
know
out.
They're all gay.
Yeah, when I was in Hong Kong, I went back there. The last time I was there was 2018, and I bought a, you know, when you buy things for the dead to burn.
Yes.
So
yes,
I bought an iPhone, and I drew Grindr on it, and I burned it for Leslie Cheung, because I thought, he doesn't have Grindr on his phone. So I got him a new cardboard iPhone, and I drew Grindr, and I'm like, you can use this.
That is so cute.
It was really cute.
I think he's using it. He's getting dicks.
A lot of dick. You got to get dick in the afterlife, you know?
Yeah,
and
he needs
to
get it.
I thought it was like real. I was like, I always think about him, you know, how, you know, he jumped off of this hotel.
Four Seasons.
Yeah. He jumped off and he called his hag and he just landed right when she was like coming up to the hotel. It's like so tragic to me.
So sad.
He was so sad. But, you know, his movies and his music live on.
Yes. Yes. Feng Jishu Tree is like the wind that kept blowing. One of the song I love a lot. He's such a beautiful man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even now in Hong Kong, there is nobody is really openly gay.
Mm-hmm.
They are still afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And you are such an icon.
Thank you.
Do you, like, I want to, like, when you came out, what was happening?
I think it was never really officially, like, I've just always sort of been queer. I've never actually really even ever had a sort of a coming out.
Yeah, you're just always like,
I was just always out, you know, and never, I was addressed it in my comedy, and I never really thought to actually make an official statement about it.
Yeah, so. I think that's why it's so powerful, because You are everything who you are.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people, they would have, for the career they have, there's this period of time, they are this. Next period, they are that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things like that. It's like the strategy. Yeah. Your strategy is authenticity.
Yeah.
That's really powerful.
I think
powerful.
So. Thank you.
That's amazing. I'm just so happy to be here.
I'm happy.
I'm nervous in a good way. I'm not
good.
Stuttering.
Yeah.
I'm just humbled.
Yeah.
And listening to you talking about the craft is really inspiring.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful that you're doing so much work, because it's like, that's how we get better. Like, I think a lot of times comics don't do enough work, you know, and that's the price. We have to really work on it all the time. And so that's why I try to do as many sets as I can. And I try to do other things too. Like I try to do like different kinds of performance and different kinds of like art, just to keep my mind alive.
Mm, that's so amazing. So I saw your Joan Rivers pillow, and I would love to get some like some of your encounters and some of your friendship stories.
She was just oddly, she was a fan. Like, she really wanted to come see me, and like, so she would come and she would like come to see my shows, especially with New York. And, you know, she would ask me out to dinner, and, you know, we talked a lot about comedy, and we talked a lot about just, you know, what it was we were doing. And she was always very encouraging and saying that they're going to want you more when you get older, that you'll grow in value. And, it was really powerful. You know, she, just was so great. And every time I asked her to do anything, she would do it. She just was on every thing that I did, every show I was doing, she would be a part of. And, you know, we just became really close. And I would like, whenever I would bomb, I would like really reach out to her, because that was like the worst.
Oh, it's the worst.
She was just so the best was she would get so mad at the people for me. You know, when with our friends like that, when people, they're mad for you and they get madder and madder and madder. Yeah. And it's really, it was really protective thing. But yeah, she always gave me tons of her jewelry, which I never wore.
that's not my style.
But she gave me lots of perfume, lots of stuff, like always with gifts and things that I would just, it's not my style, but I'm so glad I have them. You know, what an incredible person. So it was weird when she died because it's so strange to think of somebody that was so alive to be dead. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at her funeral, we were all like just still in shock. But all of the people that spoke at her funeral, it's like Howard Stern and all these great, great sort of New York celebrities. They were all just talking about her, and people couldn't talk because they were just crying so much. And I think still like her death is still kind of something that's very odd. When I was in Hong Kong, I also bought her a little Yorkie dog, cardboard, and some jewelry and some cookies, and I burned that in the temple for her. But
she,
you
needed
know,
a Yorkie.
Yeah, she needed a Yorkie. She hasn't had one. She loved Yorkies.
I have a Yorkie.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's a good breed, and it's a good dog to have. But it's very her work ethic was something that I think we can both appreciate.
Appreciate so much.
You know, she was always going for it, going out and doing shit every day, which I think, you know, it keeps your mind alive, which I think is really smart. I mean, that's the one thing I think about aging. I worry about dementia and things like that. Like, that's why I think, oh, I've got to keep my mind alive.
Yeah.
So I try to, like, I learn new instruments, and I play music, and I do different kinds of things to try to keep myself agile mentally.
That's the best. I think, like, the more your mind works, the sharper you are.
Yeah.
Like, she's so sharp. She's so fast.
She was so fast.
I mean, like, before she went to the surgery, she was doing a set at, I think, in Upper East, Upper West Side, this little club she goes to. Mm-hmm. I forgot the name of it. She just had a set, and I think she killed that set.
She always did so good. Yeah, she always did so good. And it's probably the cutting room. It's probably something like she just always was doing stuff. And I would go see her and I would be so embarrassed. Like, just her, she was so dirty. So I would be really embarrassed. And I tell dirty jokes. So I was like really like in shock. But she was just incredible. And she would never want to know when you were coming to see her, because she had stage fright. But only for people she knew in the audience. So she wouldn't talk to you until after the show. She wouldn't want to know if you were there. She just didn't want to know.
That's good.
So she was very nervous. And also wanting always to do better than her male peers, which at one time we did this event at Kennedy Center. It was for the Mark Twain Award they were giving to George Carlin. And so she was presenting, and she wanted to do all these jokes, and she wanted to make a good impression, and she wanted to do better than some of the male counterparts, which were like Gary Shandling and all these like sort of big comics. And of course she killed. She was the best in the night. But in a sense, it was like she was still competitive, still like, I got to be better than the boys. And she always was.
So that's so empowering to see. And I just, it make my heart feel so great. Like, two of my favorite women got along so well. And she loved you. You loved her.
Yeah, she would have loved you.
Oh, because I read all her audiobooks. She talked about you a lot. Mm-hmm. As a funny way, she's like, yeah, so Margaret canceled that show, so they called me, thank god, blah blah blah. There's a gay cruise, Margaret was busy, so they called me after they called her. It was so cute. She
so cute.
Yeah, it was so sweet. It's
I loved her, and I still think, like, oh, you know, is she, her voice is in my head still, you know, years later. And after she died, I took over for her on Fashion Police, and which is her show that she loved, you know, so I was able to continue her legacy. But it was really, that was one of the best relationships I've ever had.
Oh, wow. I can see you guys really, I can imagine, you know, I have like, in my comedy world, in my life, in my imagination, I would have my comedy heroes. mm-hmm. I would have you giving me advice.
Yes.
Before even I met you, in my imagination, I was like, what would Margaret say?
Yes.
If somebody, the show didn't go well, or which joke I should do, if I want to do abortion joke in Dallas, I really want to do that joke. I really do
want
to. And I'm like, I don't want to, they would be mad at me. Then I'm like, what would Margaret say? What would Joan Rivers say?
They would say, do it. And also sometimes when things don't go very well, that's just part of the landscape of comedy. Like, you know, sometimes things do not go well for me, and it doesn't matter, because mm-hmm. it's just another learning experience. And then you go to the next thing and it's like, oh, okay. It'll help you figure out more. Mm-hmm. Failure is the mother of success. So that's always what I'm like thinking, like when I'm like doing a set, it's not going well. Mm-hmm. And the next one will be good. You just have to keep going.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so good. I always think about that because of my mind as this like daughter of a very strict Chinese mom. My father was an alcoholic, so he was never in my life. So my mom worked hard to raise three children, and she's very resentful of him. And she's too tired, I guess. She has no compassion to talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
If I ask for anything, it annoys her. She get mad at me. She's angry. She always screaming. And I don't know what is going on with me. And she's very strict about the sex and dating. I never date anybody when I was in high school. I started dating when I was in Kentucky when I was like 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I lost my virginity, which is pretty late for America. I was 20. And I am heterosexual. And I am, I don't think I would be gay, but I also thought about it. If I was raised in a different environment, I think I would be a lesbian. I could at least be bi because I really love women. I enjoy being around women and being with women, and because it's just the energy, the feminine energy is like really beautiful, and it makes my heart feel comfortable, less toxic. But I also like, because of my mom, is she make me feel very shameful to do anything that's not traditionally right. So I cannot touch myself sexually. I've never touched myself. I never came. I never play with any toys. Whenever I have a toy close to me, I can hear her voice be like, you are gross. You are disgusting. And you should die. So I couldn't. I tried. I talked to my therapy, and she thinks she can work through with me. I think it's just like, I feel like sexuality is a lot with how we were raised.
Yeah.
You are ashamed of the things that you should not be ashamed of.
Yeah.
Like me touching myself and me being like a bisexual woman who I would be dating a woman. I think like I would die because my mom would never talk to me again. She would just hate me so much before I even think about it. Oh, you know, do I like a woman?
Mm-hmm.
That's just like, it's like a toxic shame shot down.
Yeah. And it represses you before you're even able to discover like, do I even want this? So it's like a very... Yeah, it's really. It's a problem. But also, like, if you think about like your mother's repression, like why does she have to be so repressed? Like maybe she wants that.
Yeah.
Maybe she's a real freak.
Yeah.
And so she's like, you know, what
she didn't want me to have all the things she wants.
Yeah, she's like assuming all these things about you that like she wants. So I think sometimes that repression comes from this desire to want to do all these things.
Mm-hmm.
And then we pass it on to like make sure it doesn't happen to other people. But it's a very, it's, you got to escape from it. I mean, yeah, pleasure is something that's very easy to lose. Because it's such a precious kind of thing that's needs to be safeguarded. And then all of these things kind of like can ruin it. So it's very tough.
It's very tough. And I try to be very open with my children. Like my son, whenever I do my nails, he likes to get his nails done.
Okay.
I'll do it for him, pink and red.
Yeah.
My ex-husband, he would be so mad. Like, what happens if he's gay? I'm like, well, that means he'll be better than you.
Yeah, well,
when he's gay, I don't care.
But that doesn't make people gay. It's just, it just makes you have colored nails. It doesn't have anything to do with anything.
Yeah, I think some people, like when they grow up, when the little boy wear a little dress for fun, and the parents would lose their temper on that little boy, and he's afraid and ashamed of being gay and he would hate gay people, but deep down he may want to be gay too. And it's just like, it's confusing. I just feel mm-hmm. like just let them be.
Yeah.
They are going to be what they want to be.
Yeah.
I think parents, like my generation, my mom, like from China, you are extension of their life and you have to do all the things they didn't get to do. And if you don't do it, you should be guilty. And that's just so toxic.
It's really toxic. And it's really, it's also really, assume, why should they have the power of your life? Like, why should they have the power of your happiness or peace? You know, it's this assumption mm-hmm. that they have the power, but they don't. They shouldn't.
They shouldn't, yeah.
So it's really, yeah. It's Confucianism.
Yeah.
You know, which is really damaging. Mm-hmm. I mean, Confucianism is, you know, good in some areas, mm-hmm. of course, but in that idea that you have to live life for your parents is
a
very...
A father's word, a son must obey.
It's not... It doesn't work like that.
That works good. Well for controlling.
Yeah.
Like instill fear and control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That works well for like instill fear in people and control them.
Yeah.
And unhappy fathers abuse their daughters.
Yeah.
They do because they do not know how to love.
No.
If they don't love themselves. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm trying to learn to love myself. It's a new education. Reading the book, like respect your boundary and peace. I think mm-hmm. find the peace, respect your boundaries, mm-hmm. find your boundaries, things like that. And also like complex PTSD.
Yeah.
I have that too. And
yeah.
I just feel like it's so important for me to learn to love myself. I feel like yeah. if I can't really heal the boundaries problem, I just cannot date healthily. I'm just not going to be able to date a guy.
Mm-hmm.
I will always do something stupid and I'll allow him to do something stupid. And then I hate him. And then I just also like as a boss, I love my assistants and I love the employee and they will do things that's bad. I won't tell them. I feel bad to tell them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they keep doing it until I have to fire them. And then they were shocked. Like, why will you fire me all of a sudden? Like, you didn't tell me anything wrong with me. So sometimes I'm like, I should learn to communicate because it's hard to say no in Asian culture.
Of course.
No.
Of course. But it's also like, it's good service to say no. It's important to say no. Or it's important to learn how to set those boundaries.
Yeah.
You know, before things get too, you know, like out of control. And but it's you know, it's something that we're learning.
I just want to thank you so much for having me at your beautiful home.
Thank you.
And being around your babies.
Yeah.
I would love to have you on my show at Ice House. I have it every month. A lot of them, I'll check your calendar first before I bug you.
We'll do it.
Yeah. And if you are missing some of Joan Rivers' jewelry, I'll be the one who stole it.
Okay.
Thank you so much,
thank
Margaret.
You.
I appreciate you. Hi, Lucia. Hi.
She
thank you.
Thank you.
What's your website? People can
People can find me at margaretcho.com.
Yes, that's where you can buy tickets to see her on tour.
Yes.
See the legend on tour.
Yes.
Thank you guys so much. Thank you.